Lewis Mandalore, how the devil are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. My friend the machine, I must say thank you kindly for having me on here. Doesn't compare, does it? And I'm honored to be on the show, mate. Thanks for having me. I really don't deserve to be on the show, but yeah, because my pals, you've given me an opportunity to have some fun, so I appreciate it.
Are you kidding me, man? You absolutely deserve to be on this. The truth is that when the opportunity came to have you in The Debt Collector, I didn't know that much about you, but I loved the look of you, and you appeared to be a guy that could handle yourself. I didn't know a lot about your martial arts background, things like that. We've done three films together now, and you're a tour de force when it comes to the action. I mean, we'll talk about the fight sequence that we had to go and all the rest of it, any martial arts background, but I want you on here because I think more people need to know about the machine, Lewis Mandalore, and how you are real deal, can handle yourself, tough bastard, a fantastic actor. And I think more people need to know about your martial arts background and all the rest of it, mate. So you're very welcome to be on here.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate the kind words. The machine within. Yeah, right? Mate, thanks for having me on.
Well, let's get into it then, Lewis. Can you tell us a little bit about your fighting and martial arts background?
Okay, yeah. When I was real young, I wasn't a fan of school, and I started with Gojikai lessons across the road from the church when I was a kid. Gojikai, you know, the stiff, rigid. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that style. But
karate, yeah?
Yeah, karate. And, you know, after all these years, funny enough, you look back at that stuff, especially in the movie business, you're always comparing it to real life, aren't we? Like, what would work and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I used to laugh at these moves, you know. But come to think of it, they were all like, you know, it's a combination of everything, the martial arts, when you really, really analyze it. And I love that. So to answer the question, started with, just thought I'd mention that because I was thinking about it today. Yeah. Started with Gojikai. Yeah, right. Right. It doesn't feel like, it's like, oh, come on, what are you going to do with that in the street? But realistically, you're in a bar and these movements are very valid. I really got into the boxing when I was a kid. So boxing was my number one go-to thing. I trained almost every day of my childhood, from my early teens to coming to the States. Back then it was, I think it was PKA, the rules in the kickboxing world, and had a lot of mutual friends who were kickboxers. And back then it was the boxers were teaching the kickboxers how to punch. And, you know, the kickboxers would come to our gyms, and it was the amalgamation of the kicking and the punching back then. I think it was the earlier 80s. So I started to do a little kickboxing, being taught by some world-class friends, you know, Tosca Petrides and Stan the Man and my pal Tony Torcasio, all in Australia, Paul Fifield, one of the greatest coaches. So learned how to kick. That opened the door. And then I got into the movies in America. And
Hang on a minute. I'm going to stop you there because let's have a little look at this. Can you see that?
Yeah, I can, buddy. Yeah, Emerald Hall. Yeah, this was the local church, and back then they used to have some fights, and this was one of my fights as an amateur. I had about 18 or so of these fights. I started so young, it was before my first 3-4 fights were without headgear, and then they introduced the headgear for safety reasons, obviously, even though I don't think they do much other than prevent head clashing and cuts, but they definitely don't defend you against the punch. Nonetheless, yeah, this was one of those bouts that I happen to have found after all these years.
How old are you here then?
I'd say about 15, 16, 17.
What? That young?
Yeah, and I had my first fight a little younger than that. My first couple of fights were a little younger. Yeah, I got him. He was from a jail, and he was a jail champion, and he was knocking everyone out in jail. And somehow there was this round-robin competition, and they matched me against him, and he was very awkward, but boy, he had heavy hands. But yeah, he went down in the second. That was a good day.
It's like yours were heavier, mate. This guy's bigger than you, isn't he?
Yeah, this guy's bigger than me, and he was a tough guy. And funny enough about this particular cat, his name's Lincoln Williams. And the irony is, when I posted these clips not long ago, him and I rekindled our friendship and we became friends. He's such a lovely chap, and we're going to have a coffee when we when eventually I get back to Australia. But after 30 plus years, we became pals. It's pretty interesting. So this was a big fight at the time. We were two big prospects going into the national champions. And this was a bloody war. And a lot of respect, but we both wanted to win. And the summation on this fight is he started real smart. He was like Tommy Hearns, tall, slick, fast kid, you know, younger Tommy. And he was on me the first two rounds, I think. First round was his. Second round could have gone either way. Third round, I think I won, but he deserved the win. He won on a split decision.
You got to get on in on the inside, haven't you, with these guys?
Yeah, you got to, and you don't. Amateurs is tough, you know. I always started in the second or third round, as I sent to you. Third round. What's the? I didn't get going until the third, fourth, fifth round, even in sparring sessions. So hence, it was difficult once you were behind to get ahead. But here I put a little pressure on, but it was too late.
Real deal, man. Getting right stuck in.
Yeah, got stuck in. There were some hard boys. You know, Melbourne, Australia was a hard town back then. And now it's changed. There's licenses and security guards. And, you know, back then it was a free-for-all, you know, bullying, fight fest. And there was a lot of knowledge growing up, watching some peers and some friends. It was a tough town, man. It really was. So in the boxing scene, there was a lot of tough kids, a lot of prospects.
So you went to America, to LA, to pursue boxing, not acting.
That is correct, actually. My brother did a movie with Teddy Atlas called Triumph of the Spirit way back then, a real beautiful film. My brother broke in Hollywood. He was doing real well. And I just fought a guy in Tassie. And Tassie, how Aussie was that? Tasmania. ultimately, I pursued the walk of the dream of boxing and came over here and I started training. I was sitting in the acting class by day, my brother's class, and training on and off every day in between the acting classes. And I got a deal with a guy called John Bay Rudy and Jerry Buss out of the Forum. God bless Jerry Buss, he's passed now, but the Lakers and the Forum owner, you know, he kind of took me under his wing and fought for a contract. And I got the contract. I fought a guy called The Fixer, fought him 8 rounds downtown in a jail in Los Angeles. True story.
Jesus, where's the movie of this?
I wish I had it on video because it was like, it was for a deal. It was for my contract, you know, they were going to really support me. The irony is, and this is a true story, not many people know this, I'll try and make it real short, but I had my buddy knock on my door. It was on a Sunday, the fight with The Fixer, and on Saturday night, my buddy from acting class, Chris Stanley was his name, calls me and says, we're going to a party. He says, you look nervous. I said, I am nervous. I'm fighting The Fixer, wouldn't you be? So he says, come for a drink, some water. I'll take you to this party, and we'll bring you back by 1 o'clock. You'll get your mind off it. And I said, good point. Went there, and it was a party by Mindy Marin, casting director, who was coming up at the time. And she heard my voice, and she said, you're an Aussie. I said, yeah. She goes, you're an actor? I lied at that point, and I said, yeah. She goes upstairs. She gives me a monologue. She goes, Monday morning, you're going to come and you're going to audition for Stan Dragotti and Paramount Pictures for Necessary Roughness. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Yeah, a long time ago, though.
Yeah, Necessary Roughness. So Sunday, I fought The Fixer. We went to war, gave each other a belting for real, my ribs, my jaw. I was drinking soup out of a straw for about 3 or 4 days. It's happened to me a few times. And Monday morning, I go for this audition, just beat up. And my life changed because when I went in the room, I underplayed it. I couldn't talk. I couldn't move. And I was in a mood. And I remember I threw the paper down and I just said the monologue and I went out. By the time I got home, Mindy called me and said, you got the job. And I said, well, listen, Mindy, I said, I'm not an actor. I said, this guy, I'm a boxer. And this guy just gave me a belting. I didn't know what I was doing in there. And she said, it's okay. Have him give you a belting every morning before work and you'll give the same performance.
You okay?
Where are your pads, Mackenzie?
Oh, no pads for me, coach. In Australian rules, the only people who wear pads are the ref and the spectators. Trust me.
As we talk a lot of art of acting, so to speak, and underplaying it is always your best bet. And because of the beating, I underplayed it and my life changed, because truth be told, when I got home, I got offered two phone calls back to back, and I did get the contract offer for the boxing, but obviously went to Texas for 4 months and my life changed at that point. I've always had this fascination with the arts, and, you know, Bruce Lee, obviously, we all, everyone that I've seen you talk to as well on the show, I mean, what a cat, right? And seeing that, you're like, everyone, I think, said, I want to do that. But only a few of us train as hard as you do and can do that and more, by the way. So in saying that, I was fascinated, and I was lucky to have met through my brother, a chap called Winston Omega. And he was in Los Angeles at the time pursuing a film career and living here. And he was...
We actually had Gary Daniels on recently talking about the very same man.
That's correct. Yeah, I saw that. It was a great interview, and I liked Gary a lot. And he actually summed Winston up. He surmised him as a link to the old world, because he really is a fascinating human being. So I was fascinated, and I studied with him as long as I possibly could. And it was a long time. And it was in a very effective art form. It was all the infighting you see on the dummy work that personified and, you know, to the point of regrouping your tissue, so to speak, in your arms, and the continuous, slow, methodical, precise repetition of these strikes. And 3, 4, 5 months into it, you can definitely feel the difference. 4, 5 years into it, and someone like Gary, who trains religiously, the effects are pretty phenomenal, and other people can feel them.
I felt the effects when we had our little fight scene in the Debt Collector, and you were blocking my punches, and I was like, let's go again. You're all right, Scott? I'm good.
That was one of my greatest days, and because you brought it up, I remember you said to me, shall I keep going? I've lost it.
Yeah, sorry. My dad brought in a tea. Go on.
So I can sip my coffee. Good stuff. I was going to say one of the greatest days, and when you said to me the next day, I didn't know if you were messing with me or not, but you said, Jesus, mate, heavy hands. I can feel it. I've got to change the choreography. What's going on here? So I was flattered, but, you know, people don't realize it. Yeah, you get used to it. It's physics. It's science, and you adapt, and if you do it the right way, it is extremely effective, and, yeah, it works. I had two guys, including myself, through Sifu Omega, actually, get to the point where we're doing shin on chain. We went through the rope, the steel, the towels. Then we wrapped a chain around, tight around the steel, and we would just start every day just tapping it with the shin. In the beginning, you can barely touch it because it'll split the skin. Simple as that. Even after years of iron palm training. Then as we continued, I remember 3, 4 days into it, I'm starting to hit this chain. And the feeling, I could feel it, but it was absolutely bearable. 3, 4 weeks into it, I'm doing combinations on this steel and dropping bombs onto that chain. I remember thinking, wow, how was this even possible? So the body can adjust and get to that point.
And has it kept that way? Or do you have to keep this training, sort of training up?
It's like most things, it's a way of life. You have to keep it up to maintain that level. But what I do realize, because of my intense training, I've maintained a point where, compared to the normal person...
Oh, yeah. I've seen you punch in, like, metal railings and everything. I'm like, all right, you're right, mate. Come on.
Yeah, it becomes fun. And, there's a way to do it, though, for sure.
Awesome stuff. Badass, dude.
Not at all. I just enjoy the process, and I love filmmaking like you, mate.
I'd love to talk about all your street fights, but probably we should go there.
I'll tell you a little bit on that. I grew up in an area where a lot of my friends did, that's for sure. And I grew up in the club scene and, you know, bummed around boxing gyms. And, you know, we were the Greeks in an Aussie neighborhood then. It wasn't that easy, really. So there was a few scraps. And as far as that goes, it was interesting because the martial arts, as we all know, you can study and you can do your points and you can do your touch sparring and all that. But that's the one gracious reality about boxing and kickboxing. The sparring is genuine. It's with bad intentions. So because I've had a little experience in the street growing up, I've got to train my martial arts. When I train on dummies, when I train on the bag, it's specifically, I mean, some cat said it the other day, you know, Shaolin or Kung Fu or martial arts represents, I guess, peace and tranquility to most people. To me, it represents one thing, and that's just war. And someone said that a month ago, and I said to myself, yeah, it's true. I mean, I love it and it is spiritual, but I don't train for the spirituality. I train for obviously exploring the arts to see what really works and doesn't. So when I was a kid, what motivated me originally going to boxing was I had this distrust with myself. I had this little phobia. I ended up not liking myself and where I was. I wanted to change my look. You know, I wanted to change the color of my eyes because I was, you know, this big, those blue eyes, these handsome, and hated it. So
you didn't like being handsome?
It was more than that. I was a smart ass. Ended up being a bit of a bully, blah, blah, blah. But before I started boxing, I lost some friends because went through a phase. My dad got on to me, and that's when I started boxing. I thought, my friend said go boxing because now these guys can clobber me and I can change shit about myself. And I was training there about a month and a half, mate, true story. And I learned how to box in this mart. I was working the bags and they would make me spar and I would just be punching back. Then one day I'm in the ring and they're gloving me up and they've set me up. And this kid was a jockey, but he used to box and his brother was a pro fighter. And they're all the gang there, and I'm this little Greek boy in an Aussie gym. I mean, it was a rough time, mate, you know? And they're gloving me up, and I hear after a month and a half of getting just knocked the shit out of and not even trying to fight back, I hear him say to his friends, watch how long it takes for me to knock this little wog, C-U-N-T, out. And when I heard that, it was like my ancestry. Yeah, man, it was like my heritage and my bloodline and everything just went... I just went, ugh. I said, what did he say? And I remember I said to myself, for the first time in your life, Lewis, you have absolute carte blanche to do as much damage to this human being as quickly as you possibly can. I swear, I still remember the thought process. And I turned around and I looked at him and they went ding, ding. And about 15 seconds later, this guy was out. I mean, out on the way to fucking hospital. I just destroyed this guy. That's when I realized, I said, so I'm pretty good at this. And I never stopped training from then. And I my whole personality changed. I grew to love myself and the martial arts. I guess what I'm trying to say is really helped me find myself and find my own sanctuary. And from then on, I've just never been a bully and I'm anti-bully and blah, blah, blah. So it helped me get on a track. I was pretty lucky to get that. I got a call one day and they asked me read and then they made me do some kung fu in the room. The irony is I never got to really do much of the kung fu, even though you saw a little bit, they had to tone me down, but it was a great experience at the time. It was a pretty popular show. And I remember the casting process was crazy. And to be honest, it's where I really, really started to understand filmmaking, because after martial law, I started directing films. As you know, I'm a filmmaker as well, and I really bleed out my eyes for that. But martial law gave me such an incredible knowledge. I mean, it was Stanley Tong, as we know, Stanley Tong. He's a true, true, unbelievable cat, man, for those of you who don't know him. Jackie actually came to visit on set a few times. It was a quick hello, but it was that crew. It was that genre of these guys that came over at that time. And I think, I forget the year it was, Scott, martial law, but it was a while ago before anything like that. It was right after the Rush Hour craze with, you know, as far as a TV show, to have that crew, the knowledge was through the roof. That's the best thing I got out of the show. And meeting Sammo, obviously, and working with him, it was great. So what a learning curve that was, man.
Was Stanley Tong directing all of it or just the action?
He directed a lot of the episodes, mainly the first season to get it going.
Yeah.
He was just beautiful. I loved him. And I'll never forget one story where we talk about it. You know, stunt guys, the way they're treated in America, especially back then, as opposed to the guys over there, how they just get banged the F up and, you know, they'll do some crazy stuff. And it's one, you know, it's a rough game, right? Yeah. And you'd know better than most people, but I did get to experience it with them there. But being the lead actor on that show, we did the pilot. And I remember the first action scene, they were just whacking me. The face, the body, yeah. And you're like, whoa, yeah, I'm the star of the show. What are you doing? But because of my background, I said, just go with it, man. I mean, they're back giving it to me. And that was an experience. And I saw so many stuntmen get asked to leave. And they would just bring in the next until they found the stayers. And then they kept all these guys. And the irony is all these guys end up flying, you know, doing amazing. Yeah, the first season. I only did the first season. I left second season. But this is one of the episodes, man. Yeah, what can I say? The good old days. The good old days where Mitch Gould and I, we wrapped this shot. They broke us for lunch and we're on Hollywood Boulevard and it was a summer day. And he had the fake tat, all the fake tats painted on him, the same shorts, colored the same hair. And we're walking together down Hollywood Boulevard and we kept getting beeped at. And we didn't even realize, what's everyone beeping at us for? And we took a look at each other, if you know what I mean. I just thought I'd share that story. We realized we
both had the same tat.
Same, dressed like that in same shorts.
Oh, what, with those shorts on?
Yeah, I mean, nothing on. We were walking to the base camp, you know. It was just quite a moment.
That was normal on Sunset Boulevard in the 90s.
My point. Yeah, man, great, great. As I said, learned so much about coverage, the cheats, when to make contact, when not to make contact. A little Muay Thai here, got to do a little Muay Thai.
Dug the shin into him then. Was he all right with it?
Yeah, he was all right. He took it pretty well. But, you know, there's a way of touching and then extending the hip so it looks like you're going through. But, you know, we were looking after each other. But there's one guy, this is the clip I'm thinking of, that there's one guy that actually got hurt with the shin kick because he forgot to really block and it went on his head. And I think it's part of this clip. But, hey, look, I was in shape. On the Grillo back then, mate.
On the Grillo, mate, yeah. On the Grillo.
It's Big Nils.
He was in Debt Collector too, wasn't he?
There is he right there, yeah. Nils and I go way back. He's obviously, you know, Nils, he's been around. He's a great cat, man.
Fighting back to back with the great Sammo Hung.
Sammo was one of the coolest guys, man. And we did get along very well, for real. And what I did learn about him was extremely intelligent as far as a filmmaker. I believe he did direct the first Ip Man. Am I wrong?
Number two. Oh, yeah, one and two, the action director.
Yeah, so, I mean, he really knows his stuff, and I learned a lot from him. And as far as the actual martial arts, in my opinion, anyway, he's one of those guys that, you know, he's had a few encounters in the street for sure. You can tell the way he grabs you, the way he moves. He's got the scars. So, you know, Sammo's a real deal.
Oh, yeah.
And this is Mitch Gould, who does this beautiful kick here. That, wow.
I saw that and I was like, flipping hell, Lewis.
That's high class stuff. I did a very bad version of it. And I have a saying, you know, with stuntmen, if they make it look better and safety first, obviously, but if they can enhance the visual, then why not? I couldn't get near as high as Mitch. You know, he's a great gymnast.
Yeah, that's more of a gymnastics thing. You know, this is pretty early on in your career, right? And you're learning from the best guys in the business. Is that, that's not JJ Perry, is it?
No, it's Jeff.
Look, that's JJ there.
That's JJ there, yeah. That's JJ.
Isn't it more than once then? You're learning how to do fight films from the best guys in the world.
True. And I went and directed my first motion picture film when I left martial law because of that. Coverage, setups, just the way they do stuff, everything, inserts, the choreography, the way they do it in pieces, when the dance. It's just, yeah, I learned the majority of, I guess, the inside little tricks that they do.
And to do this in a TV show as well, I mean, yeah, certainly back then, absolutely unheard of.
Yeah, it was pretty fresh. I remember the first year it was pretty popular. And it was great memories. Looking at this now, it puts a smile on my, you know, it's good memories, man. Oh, Champions. Yeah, well, look, man, that was actually my first, I went on an audition and legitimately booked my first lead character in a film. Was with Kenny Shamrock. Back then, Kenny was the UFC champion of the world. He was a bad man and a really good man. We got along great.
Yeah.
As far as the film, you know, with a... Why are you looking at me like that for?
No, listen, this is a stereotypical 90s sort of martial arts film. Mm-hmm. I used to lap this stuff up as a teenager. This was my bread and butter back then. I would watch movies like this every week. They were coming out on DVD, and this is the sort of stuff that solidified my dream of what I wanted to become when I was older. So yeah. I'm not knocking it, but it's definitely got that cheesy 90s thing going on.
But like you said, it is what it is. I'm proud to be part of it, no problem. It was that era, you're right. But it was a great learning curve. Learned a lot again. I mean, it was my first lead. And truth be told, on this set, the first day of filming, it was reminiscent of that Bruce Lee scene where he walks in and catches the big group and me and Cameron face off. But they had these pillars, you know, with all these lights attached and everything. It was a group of people talking. And I remember leaning on the pillar and I brought everything down. And they said, "Who did that? Who did that?" And everyone's pointing to me and they're saying, "Lewis, move." I'm like, no, it's me. I brought the set down because I didn't understand that's how green I was. I leaned on the prop and it brought down three pillars. That's a true story.
But so they didn't... before or after martial law?
Oh, man. I think, you know, I couldn't answer that actually, Scott.
Yeah. Well, because I was surprised to see this because it's like a full-on martial arts film.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I can't remember the year, actually, mate.
I didn't know that you'd done anything like this that was full on, like, martial arts, action hero type of thing.
You know, I forgot I did it when we were talking. I just completely forgot. This was one of the, like I said, the first lead role I ever booked.
This is you with the iron palm here, look.
Oh, yeah, we. I just asked if I could just fool around with it a little bit, yeah. The repetitive drill, yeah. He was a good guy. Wow, memories, yeah.
Smashing my shit in there, look.
What in the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, memories, wow. If anyone hasn't seen it, The Price of Glory, starring Jimmy Smits, John Sader, Clifton Collins, myself, Ron Perlman's in this. And it's just a great, beautiful story about a Mexican family of fighters. And I play the villain, Davey Lang, the welterweight champion of the world. And I basically, you know, beat up on their whole family, other than John Sader here, which is the final fight. Benny Urquidez, Benny the Jet, legend, and an amazing human being, as we know, was the fight choreographer on this film. And the fight sequences are pretty good. We filmed them in the Forum with a full house. It was a lot of fun. But back then, yeah, I was, let's say, more actor-driven as far as doing drama, if that's a simple way to put it, like you said, yeah.
I wanted to play different characters. Not interested about, I want to do an action film, but I want to play compelling characters.
Yeah, which, you know, maybe it was a mistake, I don't know, but either way, it is what it is, and yeah.
Yeah. Well, we won't be talking about those on this show because this is the Art of Action.
It's impressive. You want to see impressive? Let's do this old school.
Got together with Cuba and we rehearsed this, changed some things up. He was really nice to me. He liked the ideas. And I'm not sure how much of it we got, but at the end... we rehearsed him getting me in some kind of armbar or choke.
Yeah,
just, you know, the one thing with me is my style anyway. I just try and keep it as, I guess, as visible but real as possible. And I'm hoping that sometimes I achieve that. This seems pretty good. And they asked me to take a free whack with the bolts of wood, glass and wood flag on this. I just thought I'd mention it. Here it comes.
Took a
freebie right in the face. And let me tell you, bolts of wood and sugar glass, it still hurts.
Yeah, I remember doing a film close range and I had a plate smashed on my head. But the stunt guy, he followed through with his fist.
Right? Boom! Yeah. The dance of the action, it's a great thing. And I've watched you a lot, obviously, on the DCs and even on Avengement, which was, by the way, a kick-ass film, mate, really. And putting it together is really fun, interesting, but it's hard work, isn't it, mate?
It's really hard work. Yeah, I always say it seemed like a good idea when I was 12. but it takes its toll. It's a love-hate relationship for me. I love the end result. And I enjoy doing it to a degree, but there's a lot of pain involved. So it's, and I put a lot of pressure on myself. So that day I wake up and it's a fight scene day, I'm already in a bad mood. I'm like, just get through it, because I'm not going into it thinking, just, you know, do as little as you can and get through the day, whatever. I'm thinking, rise to the challenge. It's not going to be good unless it's painful.
Yes. Yeah. You're in fight mode, really. It's fight mentality. Yeah, for sure, man. I hear you.
Yeah.
And things that you do, I mean, I've been on set with you. It's, you know, I've worked with a lot of action people myself, and I've got to say that what you do is so high octane that, you know, it's like those little breaks and stoppages for lunch and in between become so much more integral in their moment of silence, because when you got to go again, they're not small moves. And I remember one time that a couple of the stunt guys were late on their cues, and you were very nice, but you said to one of them, you're like, one more time and you're gone. Because you can't do that 50 times and have someone else miss their cue. And, you know, I was trying to tell that in a seminar with stunties, you know, you got to understand that it's a dance with everyone. You've got to be right on point, or else your lead guy's going to have to do that triple again.
That's what people don't understand. You've only got to get it right once. Yeah. So you've got a sequence and it goes from A to B, and the performers have got to be on the ball. Stunt guys have got to be on the ball. Camera's got to be on the ball. Boom operator needs to not have it in the shot. Sun needs to be in the right place. There doesn't need to be an aeroplane going across. There doesn't need to be some crazy guy shouting. You know, everything, all this chaos around you, but you only need to get it right once.
Yeah.
But if you don't get it right, you have to continually do that take again and again and again and again and again. And if you're making a martial arts film that you want to have a lot of action in, so you're doing many shots, if you're going to do 20, 15, 20 takes for each shot, what toll is that going to take on your body? So I try to be on my best behavior, but sometimes it's just like, you get so annoyed, because if you put with someone that isn't professional, you know, I don't want to see them there.
Yeah,
because no. What I do is hard enough.
Yeah. I get it, mate. I get it.
Don't get me started.
No, I get it. Yeah. I remember, I don't know how I thought of this, but I really am a fan of Stanley Tomlinson. I remember on set, he was directing one of the first three episodes of Martial Law, and we were doing this fight gag where I hit this guy with an uppercut and he jumps up this way and he turns and he just does a backflip and lands on the concrete though. It was just off the table like this. And the stunt, he said, oh, I can't do it. There's not enough room. I need an armadillo and all this sort of stuff. And Stanley said, no, you can do it. Watch. He got on the table and he just did it.
Yeah.
Just did it. Bang. And everyone just went, ah. And I used that once on set. But
no messing around. Now, a great experience for me to start off in Hong Kong movies and to be experienced. That was my experience from the get-go. So then when you get to do an American movie, I was like, well, you know, it needs to be. And in fact, the first American movie was with Isaac Florentine anyway, so that was kind of still in the trenches. When I got to do something that was completely different and as it normally would be, it's like, no, man, we need to be experiencing more pain here.
Right.
Let's go again. Not good enough. I need to hit him harder. He needs to hit me harder. All the way.
Yeah. I hear you.
I said,
for all those Dead Collector fans out there, it was such a pleasure to get this gig and work on this film. And my favorite story is the first day. I still share the first day where I came in character and we were outside the Harvey's, the car scene, and we had about 3-4 pages of dialogue, man. And we didn't meet. I haven't met Scott. The producer home Video Village was packed because they were nervous, like, you know, who's going to play this Sue and how's Louis going to do? And I know how it works, mate. I know I make movies. Everyone's watching and waiting. Can this guy pull it off? And it's a monster scene. Remember that scene? 10 for this, and it's 100 for this, and it's 50 for this.
There's a lot of scenes like that.
Yeah. And I remember we did the first take, my favorite story. And after the first take, everyone went quiet. Scott gets out of the car. Jesse and everyone's talking behind Video Village, and I'm in the car just watching, like, what's going on? Oh, they fucking hate me. I just, I'm going home. You know, you think all that as an actor, what am I doing wrong? You start doubting yourself. Then Jesse comes around to the window and whispers to me, are you okay to do another one? That's what he says. And I said, yeah, mate, of course. Go back. We did another one. And then I saw you go like this or something. And then Jesse got out. And lo and behold, the story afterwards was the guy was acting. Because these guys thought I was going to drop dead because I was doing the cough and the...
Yeah, well, you had this. It's like you had reflux or something. And you keep going... And I'm in the take, in the middle of the take going, Jesus, is he all right? Is he going to be okay? Bloody hell. I'm saying to Jesse, going to be all right to edit those bits up? Didn't know that it was part of the character. I thought it was just you struggling with some reflux.
Yeah, right. No, that was great. And Jesse told me afterwards, he's like, I told everyone, hey, everyone, guess what? He's acting. We better get on it. Yeah, it was great. Because I came ready, mate. I was nervous. I mean, I prepped. And between me and you, the acting talk again, I know it's an action show, but as far as the acting...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I took a risk with that about, you know, playing it and giving it a mumble. And I was rehearsing it thinking, I want people to, like, lean in to try and listen. Because usually when you project, it's a little theatrical, you know, generally when we overact. So I remember thinking, I want to do it just enough to it's barely audible and barely recognizable. So people that watch it have to kind of go like that. And it felt like a good idea to me. Ultimately, it seems to have been a good choice. But that way, I thought, what did I do for that 5 minutes? Yeah, really. But ultimately, it worked. You've got to trust yourself, too, at the end of the day when you take a risk, I guess.
You're gonna do something or what? Excuse me, I'm watching Harvey, okay? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love working with you. It's a pleasure. You bring out the best in me.
Oh, thanks.
I don't know what it is, man. We just click. We click. We enjoy the work. We're passionate about the work. Yeah. You know, I'm doing the art of action here. I'm passionate about the art of acting. Mm-hmm. I truly am. And to get together with someone like you who's very unselfish as an actor and is happy to meet up ahead of time and just, you know, break down the scene and try and bring it off the page and make it more than what it is and turn it into the best thing that it possibly can be.
You know, you generally, buddy, my opinion on that is it's a collaboration, whether it's Kubrick and Nicholson or Scorsese and De Niro. It's definitely a collaboration, whether it's two, you know, like Lethal Weapon cats, you know, they are. It's a collaboration. And what I've found lately is, like with me and you, really there's a lot of trust. And that's how a set should be from the father, the director and the kids, the instruments, the actors. There should be some trust. And, for example, to experiment and to try everything. That's what I love. And I'm on some sets even these last couple of years where you don't feel that trust or you don't feel the openness to say, hey, how about this? Because then you'll be, oh, who are you to suggest that? Or, you know, you're just an actor. You're just third banana. You can, whatever it is, there's always this feeling of, let's say, non-trust. Or how about we do this, guys? How about instead of, we're good. You know what I'm trying to say? So we have zero of that, which I think allows us to find that magic, that organic magic that's within these characters. And that's no ego. That's one thing very important.
But don't leave it all up to me this time, will you?
Yeah, man, it was a good day. We had the Harvey one, but that's just one right hand and then a vase over the head. But this is the big one for me. Yeah. It was a hot couple of days, I remember that. But nah, man, I was ready to go, and it was some good choreography, brother. And the worst thing about everything for me was I decided to wear these cool looking boots, and you got a glimpse of them there. They were nice, but they were just so uncomfortable. So I just remember the first one. I was like, just every day I'd go home just dead in the feet. The boots were so uncomfortable, but they looked good. Yeah, man, it was a great experience of making it. It just felt good. Like, I remember just laughing at points where I shouldn't be laughing, like when we break into the house and you chase that cat down the street and takes you for a ride in the car. There was nothing funny about that. But I remember watching the take on the chair, just having my chips, and I was just giggling. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It was like there was just something funny about you sprinting in the suit, saying, give it to me, abusing me and running, grabbing onto this car and rolling in the street. That's when I felt like, wow, there's something going on here, because it's funny when it shouldn't be funny.
If it's up to me, I like a bit of comedy.
Me too, mate. Yeah, and it seems to be there.
Hospitality, you remember how to do that, yeah? Off your feet. Out of the car, asshole. This is the reality of making an independent movie. We've turned up to shoot this fight scene and we're in one location. We do most of my part of the fight. And then when we get to your bit, the police turn up. It turns out that we have got a permit, but the permit hasn't been put through and somebody didn't get the memo. So the police move us on, right? My bit's on this location. Yeah, all good.
Boom.
Got that done. Having a nice, happy day. Everything seems to be going well. There's TJ. Now, this bit, we've had to go to a different location. The stunt guy that was there has had to go and take another job, which was probably more high paying. So the first person that you hit is not the original stuntman. It's actually Jesse Johnson, the director.
It's him there.
He takes the
profile. There he is. Boom. Good sell, Jess.
Now, why are we shooting down from above? Or down up from below? The reason is we can't film the horizon because it's a completely different place. And it was only the floor that looked like the other location.
Yeah, I mean, filmmakers know this, and for those who don't, I call it going to war. Making a film really is you're at war with the elements, with the people, time, and everything else, the police, the permits, everything. So yeah.
Sometimes you run out of luck. We were very lucky on the first Debt Collector, and it seemed like on Debt Collector 2, we'd run out of luck. We kept running up against different obstacles.
It's true. But somehow, all these little moments came together again. It was nice. That's the thing, you know, whenever we got to the point, that corridor, that window, that really matters in filmmaking, in my opinion, is it's between action and cut. You know, that's really at the end of the day that all the other stuff, we can talk about it now. Everyone's like, yeah, whatever. But the actual film, and for some reason, when they called action, we I guess it was the rehearsal and the prep. We'd always find time to prep that little bit. And we just found those moments. Even in the ring there, a lot of that wasn't scripted, you know, those little bits. Yeah. You remember the Marcus Aquembrissi rules? Yeah. Well, F them. Go get him. You know, little, you know. Yeah, just a little bit.
He's trying to bring stuff to the table, you are, and make things better. It was great working with Aaron Tony, yeah?
He was great, mate. Class guy, really good martial artist. And we looked after each other, and it was a fun bit of choreography. And then you guys went at it pretty hard. It was great.
Again, we were completely running out of time. This was the day that we'd lost our DP because his wife had selfishly decided to have the baby early. So he didn't turn up. We'd lost loads of time and we just had to get through.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, man. But this was, there were some laughs in this. I remember when I Golden Boy does well for about 4.2 seconds and then you scream at me, you got it, you still got it. And I start jumping and he just goes, crap, it was just great. Yeah. Golden Boy. Boom. Yeah, no, it was a good day, man.
But this is when you have someone like Aaron, he's just going to help you out. Because he's always going to be on the mark.
Always sharp. Yeah. Well, yeah, man, a real pro.
That's what you need, especially when you haven't got the time. You need someone who's going to be on the money every time.
I think you moved a bullet, Frenchie.
Another improv.
Boom.
Now, I'm a huge fan of They Live, one of the best fight scenes ever made. Roddy Piper. Keith David, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if our characters come to blows at the end of this movie? And I was very inspired by They Live, so I wanted to make it like that. So I remember sending you the messages on WhatsApp, saying, Lewis, mate, you've got to get training. You're going to be doing a boxing fight and we're going to fight at the end. You better get ready. You're like, yeah, no, I'll get ready. So for all this time, I'm bigging it up. Check in. Are you fit enough? We've got to go for it. Bearing in mind, I still didn't realize all this martial arts stuff you've done in the past. I've only just figured this out recently. But anyway, so I'm giving it the big end. And we get through the day we did. We had 2 days to shoot this end fight, right?
Yeah.
What happens to me?
Zip.
No, I end up on a drip. In my trailer on a drip, dehydrated, filming that in September in the valley.
That was great. Made my day. He was just tired, viewers, but I take credit for it with the iron palm. Dude, he was just tired. I'm going to take absolute credit for it. No, that was a great day. So were you happy, by the way, mate? You've worked with a lot of people. I've never asked you actually this question. You've worked with the best of the best. You are the best right now. You're number one. How was it working with an actor that is aspiring to do more action?
Best compliment I can give you is to just say this. It was easy.
Cool, mate.
Because when it comes to doing fights, it's never easy, right? But the better your partner, the easier it is. So it was easy. We're flying through it. You're remembering the choreography. The timing is down. You're able to stay within inches of the blows, you know, because you're, you know, real fighter, used to staying in the pocket. So we can be precise. We can be close.
Yeah.
We're flying through it. The problem was the heat.
Yeah, it was pretty.
I just started cramping up on the second day. I was in a right mess.
Yeah, well, you're doing some big moves, unlike me. So that's what's going on there.
I wasn't even doing any big moves. I think what it was, mate, is that I had a few beers.
I recall.
Yeah, at the weekend. And I think it came back to kick me in the ass.
I don't know if you remember, but during these long sequences for the viewers, in between moments when the camera was in the right position, because there were long sequences and we had little names for little pieces, remember? Like the Khyber, that move, you know?
Yeah.
So in the middle of the fight scene, cameras are rolling and this camera's behind Scott and he'd be whispering to me in the middle of the shot, Khyber.
Yeah,
and that's the next move, and the Khyber's a little symbolic for us, but
I was also running around behind the camera as well, wasn't I, trying to make sure that I was,
it was a busy couple of days for you,
happy buddy. With the shot, but let's talk about it, man. It was great. Yeah.
Well, I'll start by saying what I really, really love about any fight scene in a movie, I'm sure again the audience does as well, it's what they're fighting for. And it's always about the story propelling the fight. Am I wrong? So it's not just another meaningless fight scene. So I love the build-up from when you realize in the room what's happening, and the walk prefacing this is when I get all, oh, because you know it's going to go down. And then, yeah, what an interesting dichotomy. We don't want to do it. We don't want to fight, right? Both of us really don't want to fight. Yeah. But in our heart of hearts and our righteousness, we both feel we must. And that sets up a great character-driven fight scene. And as far as the action, I think it looks great, man. God bless. It was actually quite the day, if you remember, on set with agents and managers. And
oh, the worst day for them to turn up. It's like, just go away. Just leave me alone. I'm busy making a fight.
It was a full set behind camera. And then even my, God bless Mitch Gould, who came to work with us for a day to help me out there. But, yeah, mate, it was great. A little dialogue in between. We found those little comedic moments.
Yeah, for the comedy. And
one of my favourites, really, and I got a lot of posts in my social media for this comment. It was afterwards when you let me up and you're like, now I'm going to give it to you. And I say, what are you going to do, kick me? And then you just start kicking the shit out of me.
Yeah, obviously.
It's a great moment. It's a great moment. This too, there's that's the thing, you see, story-driven action with the characters still bickering. We're still bickering as we're...
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen it for a while. It's pretty visceral, isn't it?
Oh, it's gritty. It's real, yeah. I mean, it's because it is. We're properly going at each other.
How long does it run, Scott? I have never timed it.
I can't remember now, but it's maybe 3 minutes.
Yeah, Scott kicks hard, everyone, and he's always been good to me, but once or twice on the chest, you know how it is with the action. I can just feel the weight, and I can imagine if you just, you know, did some with bad intentions, bro. But you got some heavy legs, mate. I'm glad Mitch took the big one.
Well, I didn't even do a very good one because Mitch had me staying at his house back in the day and was trying to make it, so I went easy on it.
That's right, yeah.
But this move here, we were actually going to get it in a different shot, but I've threw it in anyway, and you reacted to it so well, this spinning kick. So I actually did it in a different shot, but it worked great.
Right, copy. Oh, that straight right looked real. That just like, I like punches like that where they're not too sold. That's what drops people in the street. I'll show you which one. If you this one comes, boom, that. The
second one.
My favorite punch, just that short, right on the boom. That's when people.
You sell it one.
It looks real. That looks like a real. That's a real kind of. The only difference in reality is I would go down if you get hit that clean. Boom! That was cool.
Yeah, this is when the I was starting to need the drip.
Right.
I was starting to lose it.
Well, long scene, it keeps going, doesn't it? That's right.
Well, that's what I wanted. I wanted it to just take its time, and I wanted it to be like. You think it's ended now, but it just keeps coming. We actually had one more bit that we were supposed to do in the choreography that we didn't get to do.
Did we miss a bit?
It's at the end. I've actually, you'll see in a minute, I've got it for you. This punch. Ooh. Bang. That's great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Sue's down.
And you think, oh, it's over now.
Oh, and the zinger here, when we hit each other, I love the sound, I love what they did, it's another really nice moment.
When we hit each other at the same time, that was something that we were struggling to get to work, it was a tricky one, man, to sell a punch from both angles.
Boom! So yeah. That's a slick edit there, isn't it? It goes boom, boom on there.
Yeah, we had to help it a little bit, to be honest. It was
works, though. Works. I really love the moment, I'm glad you kept it. God, it just keeps going, doesn't it?
Oh, that's straight out of They Live, that bit. Straight out of They Live.
And a lot of people seem to get it, didn't they? Refer to They Live a lot.
I knew straight away, yeah.
Man. All right.
The sun was all over the place. The sun's just about to set now, I think, or something.
That's gotta hurt.
But we had a little bit extra to do, actually. But the way it ends, the way it finishes, is perfect. And actually, we didn't need the extra bit. But I've got the rehearsal footage. Remember when you were going to do the double Harrison?
Here we go, rehearsal.
This was the extra bit.
The dialogue on this is the funniest, but we probably couldn't play it, right? I think.
Yeah. This was meant to happen after that bit we just filmed. We get up again and keep fighting. It wasn't needed. Remember this bit?
Oh, Lord.
I'm going to do a double Harrison.
I could do a double. Well, you do that in the first one with the brothers at Harvey's. I thought that was a great moment when the other guy walks in the door, right? The brother, and he hits you, and you're going this way, and you look, and he hits you, and you swing. I don't know. Did they put a little tweet in the sound design? Like, I don't know if they did a little thing.
One of those, whistle things or whatever it is. Yeah,
but it was a nice comedic moment.
But this is how we're originally going to end it. Do you remember with the slap?
Because we were so tired, we couldn't punch each other. That's right.
Yeah.
Did Jesse not like it?
I think we just didn't have time. But we have this slap.
It's true. Then again about filmmaking, you do all this rehearsal, then you get on set, and the day goes, and then you've got 10 minutes to do something and sum it up, and that's filmmaking. Yeah, you got to adjust.
Well, the problem was spent the majority of the day on a drip. What do you reckon to working with Jesse Johnson?
Look, I love Jesse. He's an incredible guy. He's been incredibly kind to me, and he's showed a lot of faith, obviously, by bringing me into these things and all his pictures. A lover of film, man, a real film buff, and for what it's worth, he works great with you, mate. You guys are punching out some really great stuff, and as always, I'm just happy to be part of it. Love Jesse. Can't say anything bad about Jess.
We love to have you there, mate. Listen, Lewis, I personally would love to see you go more into the action stuff. I could see you as like that Liam Neeson archetypal sort of character, because the style of acting that you have, you know, you're very Brando, you know, you can play that sort of dark brooding character very well. But with the real martial arts skill that you possess, I'd love to see some more of that, man.
Thanks.
I'd love to see you do some more for me.
Well, I tell you, it means a lot. I appreciate it. I had an epiphany, and I think I told you this personally about 2-3 months ago. And I said it, I think, part of this interview, that the funny thing is now at my age and my career, I'm actually excited, and I've made a plan to pursue more of the action stuff. We just did one called Adrenaline, a lower budget film, but I got to do all the choreography and experiment with, you know, my street style of whatever I do. And it's really cool, and it opened my eyes. So the answer is, yeah, man, I'm going to try and do more in this unforgiving business that we're part of. But, yeah, I look forward to it. We'll see what happens, but I appreciate that, mate. It's a big part of my agenda for the next 5 years, do a lot of action.
You're a great guy, Lewis. I love working with you. You're a dear friend. Thank you very much for coming on The Art of Action. You absolutely belong on a show like this, and let's see more action from you in the future, man.
I'm humbled. God bless you, Scott. I really appreciate it. Thank you kindly for having me on the show, mate.